Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
And good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And I'm Dave Kabikian.
Welcome to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We're here every weekend, as you know. And when I say we, I usually mean two of us.
Yes.
But it's just one of us. Well, it's Ben. I don't want to discount you, Ben. I'm saying it's usually two attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm.
Yes. Today, I'm not even going to play one on the radio this morning.
We got one today.
That's right.
We are here every weekend to talk about estate planning and elder law and all that stuff. So wills and trusts and estates, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, Medicaid planning, fun stuff, not so fun stuff.
Stuff you want to talk about and stuff you don't want to talk about, especially around the holidays now with Thanksgiving coming up.
That's right. Well, you're stealing my thunder, Ben.
Am I really?
You looked at my notes.
I'm going to shut my mic off now.
So obviously the name of the game is giving information to people, but we are happy to answer your questions, and you can call us at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. There's a lot going on, as Ben mentioned. The holidays are coming up, and I have a lot to discuss about that. Normally when we do have two attorneys here, and in particular when we've had Harry here, over the last couple weeks and months has talked about open enrollment for Medicare.
Right.
And he's talked about how, you know, there's different programs out there. One that he in particular was taken advantage of. Taking advantage of. And we've told callers and everyone out there, if you have questions about Medicare, we don't do Medicare. We do Medicaid, right? We don't do elderly health insurance, which is Medicare, that you can always call our office and we'll give you some contact info for people who can help you. And as a special treat today, we have one of those people who could help you. His name's Steve Herwire. He'll be with us in just a couple minutes here. But Ben, I got a story and a half for you.
All right, go ahead.
All right.
Ready.
So I was reading the New York Times online, as I do every Saturday before radio.
Okay.
And here's the headline. I love it. A prisoner who briefly died argues that he has served his life sentence.
Really?
So
interesting.
Gentleman in Iowa has a life sentence in jail, and he fell ill while he was in jail, and he had a healthcare proxy, actually, so we could connect it to actually estate planning a little bit. So he had a healthcare proxy. His brother was his agent, and the proxy, the document said, do not resuscitate him.
So he had a DNR.
He had a DNR.
Okay.
And so he goes to the hospital, and apparently he had very large kidney stones that, one way or another, I don't know, led to him going septic and on the verge of passing away.
Mm-hmm.
The brother said, don't resuscitate him. Hospital resuscitated him. It's now been 4 years since then, and an appeals court ruled that no, he has not served his life sentence. I think this is the greatest argument I've ever heard. He said, basically, I died and then was resuscitated.
Right.
My prison sentence was during my
over.
Life.
Right.
I died.
Should be over.
I think this is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And I was like, this has to be the first time anyone ever argued that. Apparently it was not. A couple decades ago, this happened in New York, where there was I don't usually like talking about double murderers on the radio, but a gentleman named Jerry Rosenberg was convicted in New York of murdering two police officers. This was in the 60s, and he went through to cardiac arrest, passed away, was resuscitated, and seems like the first one to make this awful argument. But I thought it was so novel and creative, if nothing else.
I've got to think that the gentleman now looked back for case study then.
Must have.
And probably found it, and that's what he used.
Well, he had a lot of time on his hands.
Of course, he's going to be there for life.
That's right. Well, we'd love for you to be a caller, and even though we're going to be talking about Medicare for the majority of this first half hour, feel free to call with any estate planning topics. The number's 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. I mentioned we have a special guest because we do. His name is Steve Herwire, and Steve and I have known each other for many years. Steve's with Herwire Financial, and we'll give contact info for Steve a number of different times this hour, mainly because he can't call you, even if you said, hey, have Steve call me. I have questions about Medicare, the way the law works and the regulations work, he actually can't do that. Even though Steve does financial advising and the like, that's not why Steve's here today. He's here to talk about Medicare and to educate you. He has a similar philosophy as I do, which is the purpose of something like today, a radio program, even a seminar, isn't, hey, I got to go get a trust. It's, I got to get more information about possibly getting a trust. So without any further ado, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thank you for having me on. Good morning, everybody.
So, Steve, Harry, as I mentioned a number of times over the last couple of months, has mentioned that there's Medicare open enrollment. And before we get to what that is, and I ask you about that, we do Medicaid planning. You do Medicare advising, okay? And unfortunately, those two words share about six of the same letters, and people get confused. And so I'm going to just set it out there. I'll probably repeat it a couple of times. Medicare is health care for the elderly. Medicaid, at least the Medicaid we deal with, is long-term care for the elderly. So back to this open enrollment. What is open enrollment?
Well, every year between October 15th and Pearl Harbor Day, which is December 7th, you have a chance to change your health insurance for the following year. It's just like when you were employed, every year they have an annual enrollment where you can change your stuff for the next year. Well, senior citizens, when they have a Medicare plan, they have the opportunity, if they want, to do something new for the next year. Now, on the other hand, if they're happy with what they have, they can just sit on their hands and it just continues.
So let's rewind for a second. I'm 64 years old, and next month I'm going to be turning 65. That's the age eligibility for Medicare, correct?
Yes, that's correct. What you do is you take your birth month, and I'll use September as a for instance. If you were born in September, then the 3 months before September, which are June, July, and August, and the 3 months after September, which is October, November, December, is what's called your initial enrollment period.
Okay.
And this part will be on the quiz later. So when you're coming up on 65, during that seven-month period, you need to have Part B as in Bravo,
right,
and D as in Delta in place. Otherwise, there are penalties when you do go sign up.
So there are four. I think most people, at least, you know, I don't want to discriminate against our listeners, but most of our listeners do know, at least when it comes to Medicare, there are these four main parts, right? A, B, C, D. So you're saying that they need which as a minimum when they turn 65, or they have that some decisions to make?
Yes, they have some decisions to make. What we start off with is A as in Apple and B as in Bravo. A is hospitalization and B is doctoring. A, for the most part, when you go to sign up for it, won't cost you anything. There's a few exceptions, but I'm not going to talk about them. And B, which right now, if you sign up and there are no other circumstances, generally speaking, costs $135.50. You do this at Social Security. If you forget to sign up for Part B during that seven-month period, in a lot of cases, you're going to find a penalty when you do go sign up. It's 10% for every year that you wait.
Okay.
And the other one is Part D as in Delta. It's also D as in drugs. If you don't have prescription drug coverage that you sign up for during one of those 7 months, then there's a 1% per month penalty. Now, there's exceptions to all this. People will say, well, gee, what if I'm still working for my employer? And my answer to that is two words. It depends. Sometimes you do have to sign up. Sometimes you don't.
I have a patent pending.
I think he just stole that from you.
Yeah,
I've heard that a thousand times on this show from you.
Well, so hold that thought, Steve. We do have a caller, Susan in Lake Luzerne. Oh, it must be cold in Lake Luzerne right now.
Kind of, yes.
What's going on?
We have a trust.
Yeah.
And in the majority of our trust, we're leaving to our sons. But we do have three grandchildren, and we're only leaving money to two. Is there a problem? Do we need to mention that other granddaughter that we're not leaving anything to her, or is there a problem in just ignoring her?
So there's no problem in ignoring her. You can do whatever you want. It's your estate plan. It's you and your husband's estate plan. So if you want to leave things to Ben Patton, for example, which you have every right to, you could.
Well, we can leave you a beautiful dog.
There you go. So it's whatever you want. Now, you mentioned you have a trust, and that becomes really important because when people just rely on wills, there are such a thing as distributees. So the state of New York says, hey, you know what? When you and your husband pass away, you should leave everything to your kids. That's actually New York law that if you didn't have a plan, your kids would get everything. So if you said, Dave, we're thinking about not including one of our children in our plan, I'd say, well, let's have notes in our system, and to the extent that we have some, you know, we're holding them out of receiving an equal inheritance in your will, let's mention them. We don't want people to think that you forgot you had a third kid, for example, right? So we do want to mention them. When it comes to grandkids, though, they don't have a right to receive anything, and it's up to you as to whether or not you want to communicate with your kids or even with your grandkids what your estate plan is, and you don't have to say to anyone, this is why I did it, and is it okay that I did it? This is your plan. So whatever you want sounds good to me.
Oh, okay. In other words, do I understand correctly, in our trust, we do not have to mention this third grandchild one way or the other?
No.
Okay. Thank you so
much.
Now,
can I just have your ear for one more point?
Pardon me?
Let me just say one more thing.
Yes.
So how old are the grandkids that you want to leave money to?
17, 24, and the one that we're eliminating will be 18 in September.
Okay. So I don't know what age, you know, nature takes its course with any of us, and I don't know how old your grandkids are going to be, but if you think that they're, you know, 17's too young for one of your grandchildren to receive money, or 24 is too young, make sure that your trust has language that deals with what ages they could get money at, or whether you want it to go towards school, or this or that. You have a ton of power right now, so just make sure that your documents reflect your wishes.
Oh, that's great. Now, with say with the school, with the 24-year-old, if we set up that she couldn't get until she was older, can she withdraw immediately to pay off student loans?
No. No, unless you provide that the trustee can give it to her to do that.
Oh, okay. In the trust, then, we can specifically say that she can pay off her student loans, but
yep,
nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's terrific.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you.
Stay
bye-bye.
Warm up there.
Thanks.
All right,
we'll keep you in mind for the dog. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You can be our second caller at 518-476-5900, or as I mentioned, toll-free, 1-800-WROW-590. Steve, you were talking about prescription D for drugs. That's a good way to remember it. Not prescription D. Part D for drugs. And I think so much focus goes on when people are approaching 65. All right, they know Medicare, they know they got to make decisions. But this whole open enrollment thing, this is actually an annual checkup they can do. They can change their plan year to year. Is that correct?
Yes. If you get in a plan that you don't like, there are a number of options for exiting it. But the one that everybody gets without fail is every year between October 15th and December 7th, you can change things for the following years. There's a number of special enrollment periods, which are an individual basis. I usually talk people through on a case-by-case basis to see what's available to them. But, you know, like if you move out of the area or your plan leaves the area, that sort of thing. There are a number of ways they're not totally stuck, but that's why they sit down with somebody like me, because I go over each of the exceptions. There's also, just to make it more confusing, what's called an open enrollment period, mm-hmm. which begins on January 1st and ends March 31st. That's a little more restrictive than the one we're in right now, the annual enrollment period. You can make one change during that time. But after... once April 1st arrives, for the most part, you're stuck for the rest of the year in that particular plan.
Very good. So I know that you and I have talked several times, and you educate me all the time whenever we're talking about Medicare. And there's a supplement plan and there's an advantage plan when it comes to Medicare. And those two can accomplish similar things, but you shouldn't. And theoretically, you can't have both of those things. So can you describe for our audience what, for example, a Medicare Advantage plan is?
Yes. A Medicare Advantage plan is where you go to a private company. I offer seven different companies right now. And they raise their hand and say it's you, Dave. And they say, hey, Medicare, we're going to take care of Dave for this year. So what that means is you continue to pay your Medicare Part B, as in Bravo, premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you go to the doctor, you show them your card from ABC Medicare Company. And you pay whatever co-pays they require based on the visit. And you pay whatever co-pays.
Right.
And if you... you know, get sick and your wave your Medicare card, your red, white, and blue card, it doesn't help because Medicare says, oh no, ABC is taking care of Dave.
Mm-hmm. So the enrollment period we're in right now, which seems like it's the your best chance to change whatever current plan you have, when does that end?
It ends on December 7th. I like to call it Pearl Harbor Day because a lot of the folks in the generation that's accessing Medicare are very familiar with Pearl Harbor Day.
And, you know, with the Advantage plan, with just all the confusion that Medicaid, you know, I thought Medicaid planning was confusing. I thought elder law was confusing. And then I started to learn a little bit about this Medicare stuff. Man, oh man, how exactly do you go about discussing this with clients or prospective clients and kind of educating them? What you know, I come into your office, I say, hey, I'm 67, I have XYZ coverage right now. What do I do? What are my options? What's your process with them?
Okay, well, the first thing I do is I talk about A, B, C, and D.
The four different parts.
Yes. Yep. Medicare A is hospitalization, and as I mentioned before, you don't, generally speaking, have to come out of pocket to pay that because while we're working, we're paying for it all our lives. Okay, if you go in the hospital and you have Part A, you pay a deductible of a little less than $1,400. It covers the first 60 days. After that, you pay a daily fee. Mm-hmm. If you stay long enough, then what happens is every day after that, you're on the hook for yourself. Okay, and if all you have is Part A and you go to the doctor for, say, hangnail, it won't help at all. So that's why you have to get Part B as in Bravo.
B as in Bravo. I like it. And if people want to reach out to you to get some information, now we're going to talk about how you get compensated because, as I understand it, you don't get paid by, you know, Joe and Marie or whoever goes to see you. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is zero cost for sitting down with me. I'd love to say it's because I'm a swell guy, but mainly it's because it's against the law. What happens is if I introduce Dave to ABC Medicare Company, and he signs up with them and likes them, then they pay me.
Uh-huh.
Because my wife doesn't, like I said, doesn't let me work for free.
Right. So you are not affiliated with Medicare. You're affiliated with different providers that are approved by Medicare. Is that the right way to...
That's correct. I'm not a representative of Medicare. I don't work for the government, and neither do any of my companies. But they have a contract with Medicare.
And if you have specific questions for Steve, you could call him at 518-631-2569. As he mentioned a couple times, he can't reach out to you. Now, for the audience out there who's approaching 65, either later this year, next year, maybe the following year, what are some of the bigger pitfalls or thoughts that they should have when they're considering these different plans? Because, you know, I know for private insurance, I know that there's different co-pays, there are higher co-pays, there are lower co-pays, and it's all kind of like a math equation where the premiums I'll pay for a health insurance, may be a lower premium, but the deductible's higher, or it might be reversed. So what kind of things should they be looking at as they're approaching 65?
Okay, get a big garbage can because you're going to get a whole bunch of mail from different companies soliciting you. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, sometimes people are worried about, well, gee, what if I'm really sick? What if they won't take me? Well, there's only one medical question I'm required to ask, and it's, do you have end-stage renal disease? If you have that, you're going in for kidney dialysis several times a week.
That's a very personal question, Steve.
Yeah, but it's one that's one that I have to ask.
That's the one exception.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
Everything else is none of my business unless the person decides to make it my business.
Gotcha. And so I'm heading to 65. I meet with someone named Steve Herwire or someone like Steve Herwire to get my options on these. what happens to, you know, my spouse is still working. What does that mean? You know, how can these different plans vary from person to person? Because the reality is more and more people who are 65 and older are still working, and they might still be receiving private insurance or insurance coverage through their employment. And I know you said it depends. Can you get into a little more detail about how it depends?
Okay, suppose you came to me, you're turning 65 and you still have employer coverage. The first thing I do is I say, oh, you need to talk to your human resources person and ask them, do they want you to sign up for Medicare? Because in some cases they do, and Medicare will be the primary carrier and they'll be the secondary or vice versa. If they say, no, you don't need to sign up for Medicare, the next place I'm going to send you is down to Social Security. And I'm going to have you tell them exactly what your HR person told you and what kind of coverage you have. And then I'm going to ask that person, do I need to sign up? That way, if I get two, no, you don't need to sign up, both human resources and Social Security, then if somebody comes back and tries to penalize you later because you didn't sign up when you needed to, you'll say, okay, on this day, this person at Social Security told me I didn't need to.
Right.
Okay. What's likely to happen in a lot of cases, you will need to at least sign up for Part B, as in Bravo. The second thing you need to do is find out from your HR person, is our drug coverage Part D, as in drug, equivalent? And if they say yes, it's like, okay, most companies will give you a certification that says that. Because if you don't have, you know, what Medicare considers equivalent drug coverage, they're going to penalize you the 1% per month. One other thing that is a possibility, because I know this is equivalent for veterans out there, is if you're getting your drugs from the VA, right now Medicare considers VA drug coverage equivalent. You don't have to worry about the Part D program. This is a lot to keep track of.
It seems like a lot to keep track of.
And that's why it's great to come in to see somebody like me, because number one, we don't charge anything. Number two, we go through extensive training once a year, mm-hmm. not only on a national level, but on a carrier level. We have to take tests, and you have to get 85 or 90% every year. So in my opinion, of all the insurance certifications, we're probably the best trained in the business.
Steve, I just have a quick question. How early before 65 should someone come and see you?
Ideally, 6 months before. However, there's not much they can do until 3 months before their birth month. And I'll explain it all to them. And I'll sit down with them and I'll give them, you know, the time they need until they understand it. One of the unique gifts I've been given is I can break this stuff down for folks that don't have their head in it all day long.
Very good, Steve. Really appreciate you coming on. As I mentioned, Steve is with Herwire Financial, and you could reach him at 518-631-2569. He has a website. It's very creatively, www.stephenherwire.com. That's Stephen with a V, and then H-E-R-W-E-Y-E-R. Ben, you don't have to worry about this for quite some time. You have at least, you know, 25 years before you turn 65.
Oh, my goodness. You're so nice.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for hopping along.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Have a terrific day.
Thanks, Steve. So, you know, from time to time, we really appreciate the ability to educate our clients a little more, including in things that, to be frank, confuse me. And it's great to have resources like Steve, who can from time to time help our clients out. We also have seminars coming up, and that's another opportunity for us to help our clients out and educate the population. This coming Thursday, so November 14th at 2 p.m., we're going to have a seminar down in our Kingston location. It's at Courtyard by Marriott. That's 500 Frank Sotile Boulevard, right next to Target down in Kingston. And the topic there is going to be wills versus trusts. We had the same topic in our Capital Region seminars just a month ago, and it's a really popular seminar. Steve, before you go anywhere, we have a call. Let's just see what Barbara's asking about. Barbara, how are you?
Good morning.
What's up?
My mother-in-law had a home.
Okay.
And she prepared for Medicaid and put it in her three children's name with her having the right to live there until she died.
Or the life estate. Okay.
She passed away weeks ago, now I need to have clarification. So now the property is owned by the three siblings.
Correct.
And it's not part of the trust, correct? I mean, it's not part of the estate, correct?
That's correct. So doing a life estate where, so if you think about a piece of property, prior to mom doing that transfer, she owned the house from now until the end of time, theoretically. And when she deeded you and your siblings the house, she retained the use and enjoyment of the house for during her life. So now until, obviously her death. And actuarially, they actually could say, well, her average lifespan is blank. This is her life expectancy. And she already transferred to you and your siblings that portion that's from her death until the end of time. So when someone passes away, that life estate gets terminated, and automatically you guys continue to own the home, but there's no longer a restriction. There's no longer a life use that someone has. So that's yours to sell. If the three of you agree to do X, Y, and Z, you could do whatever you want.
Okay.
It avoids probate.
So then the utilities and the insurance on the house was in her name. So those accounts need to be terminated, correct?
Yeah, and big picture, they need to be terminated. The question I'd ask is, what's the plan for the house?
The plan for the house was up for sale before she died, and we're having problems getting closing.
Okay.
So it is to be sold.
Okay.
So should these three siblings be getting a bank account in their name and putting some money in there to pay for utilities and for a new insurance policy in their names?
So you don't necessarily have to do that. So, all the math is going to shake out at the end of the day. So if it turns out that you spend $1,000 of your own dollars to pay for these different things over the next 2 months until mm-hmm. a closing, at that closing, you would have your, real estate attorney have checks cut to you and your siblings, but it would take into account maybe you getting that $1,000 back off the top before we split things. Obviously, you could open up a bank account with the three of you. You could all throw some money in and use that account to pay for bills, and then you can liquidate that bank account whenever the property is sold. You have all the options in the world. The most important thing, though, is you don't have to go through probate at all for mom, and you could, focus on just getting that house sold when the time is right. So
right. Well, it's been a long time. What about the town taxes and the school taxes? Now they're going to be coming over into our names.
That's correct.
And we're going to have to be paying those taxes.
That's correct. But and so that's why I asked, what are we doing with the house? Because I'm hoping that this house sells relatively quickly, and it's only, maybe a quarterly tax bill you're going to have and not any really big tax bills. But it's all going to be your responsibility. So if you said, for example, well, you know what, we're not going to pay the taxes, we'll wait until a closing, that could affect your credit.
Okay.
All right? Yes.
To close out the estate, isn't it better to close out the utilities and the insurance policy that's now, and that way the estate can be closed out?
Well, so a death certificate going to those different places, and remember, the house was yours and your siblings, only subject to a life use. So automatically, there's no longer an interest that she had in the property at all. So we'd want to talk about what other assets she has, what else is possibly in her estate, but her house is actually not in her estate. So how and when you pay those final expenses, that's kind of a different conversation. And if you ever want to come in to talk about it, what we do when clients or come in or someone comes in that's not a client, mom died, dad died, we'll spend about an hour and go through a whole list of topics to then tell you what your marching orders are. And most of the time, it's not to do really anything because we're avoiding probate.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's squeeze Catherine and Rensselaer in. Catherine, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
What's up?
First of all, thanks for being there, Steve. Very informative. Would you spell your last name and your phone before I ask my question?
H-E-R.
Yes.
W E.
Yes.
Y E. R.
Okay.
And my
phone is
518.
Uh huh.
631.
Yes.
2569.
2569.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My question is, when you were talking about applying for Medicare, you said except dialysis. Why not dialysis?
The federal government has a different program for that, and Medicare Advantage, generally speaking, it's very restrictive as far as folks that have the misfortune of being on kidney dialysis.
But they still will have some coverage.
That's my understanding. To be upfront, it's not something I have extensive knowledge of, but I do know people that do.
And you do know that there's an exception for that.
Yes, there are exceptions. It depends on where you are. This is on a case-by-case basis. If you'd like to call my office, we can talk through it.
Okay, well, I just wanted, you know, general information on that.
Well, thanks so much for the call. And
you
have Steve's contact info. Wonderful. Have
okay.
a good weekend.
Bye. You too.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning. We're back. I'm Dave Kabikian, and I am, well, kind of solo. We have Ben and I kind of holding down the fort here.
And I'm Ben, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not going to even play one on the radio, so it's all good.
We're here every weekend talking about estate planning and elder law, trusts, wills, Medicaid trusts, Medicaid applications, crisis planning, special needs trusts, et cetera, et cetera. This first half hour, we were talking about Medicare. We had a special guest, Steve Herwire from Herwire Financial, talking about different issues where it comes to open enrollment and getting to 65 and your Medicare options. We have an estate planning call, though. Nancy in Poughkeepsie, how are you?
Oh, hi. Fine, thank you.
What's up?
Well, my mother passed away in 2015. While she was living, she gave me some stock.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, she passed away. If I wanted to, cash in that stock or sell it, how do I determine the basis?
Very good question. So how long ago did she give you that stock?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that.
I'm not going to be looking up the stock. Don't worry about it. So, decades ago, or what?
I know, but I have to go on my folder and look.
Okay, that's all right. So when people give things to someone else during their life, what ends up happening, as you're kind of alluding to, is that you receive those stocks with something called a carryover tax basis. What that means is that whatever your mom had bought that stock for, whatever her tax basis was, right, that's the amount she bought it for, we're going to use that number when we figure out what exactly you may owe in capital gains, if anything. And the calculation for it is, what are you selling it for now minus what was it purchased for? What was the basis? So you would need to do a little bit of legwork to kind of figure out. And you could do it based, if it's stocks and things where there's a very clear market for it, you could actually go online and to the day figure out what the stock prices were for those stocks you received on the day you received them. And then, when you do sell the stock, if you don't, withhold any taxes or do anything like that, you're going to want to let your accountant know what your basis is. Otherwise, the IRS is going to consider it all to be gain and you'll have a big tax bill.
Well, can I just ask you something, tell you something, what I know so far?
Sure.
It was IBM stock, so ComputerShare had all the history.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought the stock in 79. And they told me, that's the date that I could use because you know, just kept, you know, buying new stock with the dividends. She never purchased any more after that. So do I use the date she, I didn't understand what you said. Do I use the date that she bought it or the date that she passed away or the date she gave it to me?
So you would use, her tax basis is when she bought it. So that's going to be the basis that you use for it. Now, if she's reinvesting dividends and acquiring stocks along the way, the computation becomes a little more sophisticated. And that's where you may want to rely on someone from ComputerShare or your own accountant to help you out with that.
Okay. But anyway, it's actually it's her basis when she bought it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be the starting point.
Not when she died.
Right. And so, you know, if you're scoring at home, you know, that's one for not giving things during your life because there are adverse tax consequences. If she held on to that stock because it, you know, it doesn't sound like you needed it or you sold it, if she had held on to it in 2015 when she passed away, you would have received that stock with what's called a step up in the tax basis. And your tax situation would be based on whatever that stock was valued at in 2015.
Okay.
All right. Sorry
that's
for...
That's called Step Up.
Yeah. But thanks
but
for
I,
the...
Yeah. I looked at 1979 and it's a lot. It's more than what it is. The cost back, the price of the stock was a lot more than it is right now.
Oh, all right. Well, then maybe you'll have a nice loss that your accountant could take advantage of.
Okay.
A tax loss, at least.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Bunch of good callers. You could be our next caller at 518-476-5900. Toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. I mentioned our seminars. We do have a quick little seminar next week in Kingston. Again, the topic is wills versus trusts. If you want a seat at one of those, at that seminar, it's 518-465-7581. Or you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com. We have a whole bunch of December seminars. I don't want to talk about December, Ben. I don't even want to think
about
it.
You don't want to rush that.
Yeah,
yet.
I'm not going to mention it. No. It's although Christmas music started. Starbucks has the red cups.
They do. Red and green.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Actually, around Halloween, Home Depot and Lowe's had all the Christmas stuff up.
All the trees and the
all
lights.
The trees. And I got to tell you, I don't mind it this year as much as previous years.
Why is that?
I don't know. I got a little baby, so first Thanksgiving okay. with the baby. First,
that's what I figured.
First Christmas,
so. Yep.
Mm-hmm. A new stocking.
Doing all the firsts.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty fun stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was planning on not being solo today, and once I learned I was, I said, you know, let me go read some articles and figure out what to talk about. And yesterday I had a client, which made it so easy to be here today to mm-hmm. talk about things. So, young lady, she's 90 years old. In Saratoga Hospital, that's where I spent half my day yesterday, her daughter had contacted our office and said, Mom is in the hospital. We tried home. It didn't work. Nursing home is where she's going to be. Help. And the short version was Mom has more money than she's allowed by over $100,000 in terms of qualifying for Medicaid. And she has a house. She has a spouse, but the spouse and her aren't really exactly together. And the question was, well, how do we go about paying for nursing home that she's going to go to? How do I actually do transactions for her? Because daughter was in power of attorney. And oh, by the way, Mom has dementia and Mom's not doing so hot in general, but she has her wits about her enough. And she wanted to see, you know, she wanted me to come to the hospital to meet Mom.
Did she have an estate already?
She didn't have an estate plan, no.
Okay, so no. She starts with
nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you have to try and figure this out, cobble together something for her to help her.
Right.
Right?
And so, yes.
And hope she's lucid enough to be able to sign whatever you need her to sign.
I need her lucid enough to sign one thing.
Okay.
Which is power of attorney.
Okay.
And so I prepare a power of attorney. I go to the hospital and daughter's there as well. I meet Mom. Lovely. Lovely lady, and as you would think, if some guy shows up in a suit and documents and says, hey, how are you? I'm Dave, and we're here to sign a power of attorney, you may say, who are you again, and where are you from, and why are you here?
Right.
So she's been old, you know, 90 years on this earth, and she's got 90 years of thinking she knows what a power of attorney is, and she was very hesitant to sign anything because she thought she was signing the end of her life.
Okay.
Figuratively.
Gotcha.
Right.
Right.
She didn't want her daughter to be her agent, even though
she really needs her to be her agent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say how daughter's been paying the bills because it wasn't exactly the right way, but a power of attorney will make it the right way.
But it's actually something that she really should have taken care of 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
And by waiting until now, it just creates more problems for her because she's 90 years old.
Yes.
And maybe not understanding the concept like she could have when she was 60.
Yes. So, absolutely right. So, the power of attorney was going
to
authorize.
I do pay attention to the show, just so you know.
You're good. So, not only was the power of attorney going to allow her daughter to pay bills like she already had been doing, and move money around from savings to checking and you know, retain someone like me to work our magic, but it was also going to authorize the magic, you know, doing the complicated crisis plan, a gift and loan plan to, worst case, save a little more than half of mom's money. Obviously, I wasn't going to get into those details on a day like yesterday, but we kicked daughter out of the room, and mom and I talked for a while. I showed her pictures of the kids, and we talked about how Saratoga is growing out of control and too much development. She was with it.
Right.
And you know, I cautioned her. I said, look, you're with it right now, and God willing, you're with it for a really long time, but you might not be. And the story ends with your daughter having all the powers that the power of attorney has. But if you go the hard way, it's a guardianship, and we're going to go to court. And the only person who wins is me, because I'm going to make more money doing a guardianship. I don't want to do. I want, here is the power of attorney, and we can get all of our stuff done at once. And she still wasn't into it too much. She read every word of the document, and still, you know, a couple times she faked me out where it looked like she was initialing or signing, but she wasn't. And I said, all right, you know what? I'm going to go. I'll come back. You guys talk and come back and. Daughter's shaking her head in the lobby. Not happening. I said, let me get one more moment with mom, because I just want to make sure she understands the result's going to be the same. She physically can't do her banking or pay her bills, right? The rest of her days are going to be in this nursing home for a number of different reasons. So I'm going to get a guardianship for daughter to handle the finances. It's just going to happen.
Right.
But it's going to be expensive, so maybe there's this easier way. And we sat, we talked, we kicked daughter out again. We had a very good heart-to-heart, me and my new pal here. And the result was we negotiated. And I said, how about 1 week? Let's make your daughter agent for the next 7 days. And next Friday, I will see you at the nursing home. I will bring the power of attorney. And if you don't like it anymore, we rip it up and it's over. But it allows your daughter to move some things around so that you can sign your own checks and you can do whatever. But one of the problems, Ben, was that she had a lot of money in her savings account and virtually nothing in her checking. So the checkbook didn't do anything.
Right.
Or you couldn't pay anything with the checkbook. So even
you need to move the money over from checking to savings.
Right. So we're starting with that. We're starting with helping her with the Medicaid application. And then we'll get, you know, once... My hope is that when she sees that the world didn't end over the last 7 days, she continues to use the power of attorney, emergency averted. Because I said to her, do you know how much your nursing home is about to cost you? And when I told her, you know, and so she's 90. So she's was alive when $15,000 was, it's a lot of money.
It was a house.
But it was a house, yeah. Right. Yeah. And so she, my goodness. And I said, well, so this is a means to an end. And you kind of hit it on the head, Ben. The time to do these documents is not when you're in the hospital.
No.
I'm happy to go and visit you, and that's fine, and change whatever documents. But if you do it ahead of time, man, life is so much easier.
For everybody.
It's unbelievable. Obviously, if she did a Medicaid trust 5 years ago, I'm not saving half her money. I'm saving all her money.
Right. Was she the only daughter? Was the daughter the only daughter or the only child?
She's not the only child.
She's not.
But there's not a very good relationship with the other child.
Okay. Gotcha. So,
yeah. So this is the kind of things we do. And we try not to tell people things are on fire and you got to do this, you got to do that. But, you know what happens sometimes. And whether you're 90, like she was, or you're in your 40s, or even younger, bad things happen to different people. It doesn't discriminate. Car accidents don't discriminate.
Nope.
So it's really good to have these basic documents in place. And then it's also really good to maybe have some more complicated documents as you go. And the power of attorney form itself, we kind of make fun of it because it's 13 pages long. But some of those pages really helped me yesterday because I was able to, it's not just, she didn't have to take my word for it. I literally read the words on the piece of paper. For example, and I quote, "You can revoke or terminate your power of attorney at any time for any reason, as long as you are of sound mind." So that meant that when I told her, we could rip this thing up, you could rip it up tomorrow. That's the truth.
Yes.
We talked about what her her daughter, who's been doing everything for her. Of course, we think she's going to do the right thing, but we don't need to guess about it. The power of attorney itself says exactly what the agent's job is. Act according to the instructions from the principal. Act in the best interests. And I quote, "You may not use principal's assets to benefit yourself or anyone else unless you've been given that right." So going through this, you know, and negotiating about basically a one-week ceasefire,
right,
we're going to be able to save her a lot of money, which is really great. So, you know, this is what we do.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Well,
but again, had she taken care of it 30 years ago,
yeah,
that issue would not be an issue now.
There's enough going on in her life right now. The last thing she needs to do is wrap her arms around this legal document that unfortunately is 13 pages long, and I need 6 initials and 2 signatures, and I'm wearing a suit, and you know, I'm in a hospital, and it's not exactly the right setting for someone. So I could understand distrust or confusion. Thankfully, though, she had her wits about her. She's got dementia, but not to the point where she couldn't talk about life and talk about where she lives and talk about her family to show me that she had the right.
I was going to say, ability. Is there specific things that you have to ask her to know about whether or not she's there or not there?
Yeah. So usually I'll talk about, we start with the year and then based on how different answers, you know, do you know who this is next to me and so on. What I did was I cracked a joke about myself because daughter had said that to her mother, she said, "Mom, you told me to get someone in here." And I said to mom, I said, "Well, I heard that you wanted someone young and good looking specifically." And she laughed. And I said, "All right, you're laughing. That means you're good." Which is, you know, or she's a little off because she laughed at my awful jokes, one or the other. So a couple more things going on, Ben. In the Times, they had like a dump of articles on November 6th. And it was a bunch of documents in the Your Money section. So if you ever go to the New York Times online and you go to business and then Your Money, a bunch of great articles. Sometimes it's about Medicare, as Stephen was talking about earlier. Sometimes it's about student loans. And these articles were actually about talking about money with your family, talking about inheritances, and maybe 6 or 7 different articles. And I jumped on a couple of them. Number one, how do you treat your kids? Do you treat them the same financially? And what do you communicate with them? What don't you? And I actually didn't agree with some of the commentary from some of the experts in the articles, but they were basically saying where you can, try to have your kids on equal footing, try to treat them equally. It will lead to less issues down the road. And as an example, I said, where you have an executor, if you can name both kids, we'll name both kids because we don't want the kids to think that one was more important. And I said, no. First of all, it's whatever you want. I don't care what your kids' feelings are. That's number one. But number two, it's an awful job. We don't need 2 people to be doing an awful job. Now, there's strategic reasons to have 2 or 3 people as executors, and that's great. But if you just communicate with your kids, you don't have to name them all. And if the kids don't get along, you really shouldn't name them all. If people understand that being an executor isn't a great job or being a trustee isn't some amazing job that means you're more trustworthy and you're the better person, it might be because you're local. It might be for a bunch of different reasons. But rather than have the kids guess after the fact, talk to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Say, we have documents in place. Your father is my executor. And you know what? You know, Julie, you're the backup executor. Why? Because you're closer. And you know what? Behind you is your brother. And that's the way it is. But we flipped it on this other document. And we love you all the same, and et cetera, et cetera. The other part was, how do you deal with the fact that, well, during your life, you treated your kids differently? I'm not saying that you love one kid more than the other. I'm saying one kid's a knucklehead, and you helped them a little more through school. Or they lived with you for quite some time. You lent them money.
Yep.
The other one didn't need any money. Do you treat them equally in your will that says 50-50, when in actuality, life turned out it wasn't 50-50? Or do you put in clauses, and we can certainly do it, where we essentially equalize what they ended up getting? Because I gave Tim $30,000 to, you know, earlier in life, and I don't expect him to pay me back on it, if at my death he has not paid me back, take that 30 off the top and give it to my daughter, who I didn't lend money to. A lot of different options there. How do you reward someone for taking care of you? Right? We have children all over the country, our clients with children all over the country. And guess who's the one who's taking care of mom and dad physically when they get older? It's the one that's local.
The one that's closest.
How do you reward them? Do you reward them? And the answer is whatever you want. I didn't like the article because it seemed to indicate that all things being equal go equal. But all things are never equal. Just do whatever you want to do.
Every home situation is different.
Yeah.
No matter what. It's like the woman that called in earlier about her grandkids.
Yeah.
She didn't want to have one come up with any of the money when she passes. Does she have to do anything about it? No.
Well, and guess what's going to happen? One day, you know, she and her husband will pass away, and it'll be found out that one of the grandkids didn't get anything. Their parent got something.
Right.
And that parent can leave them money. And that grandchild may not be happy about it or may not feel very good about it. Or you know what might happen, Ben? 3 years from now, they amend their documents to include that grandchild.
Right.
Whatever they want to do. It's really simple.
But that's the whole idea. You have the control.
You always have control.
To do with what you want with your stuff.
That's right. When it comes to these powers of attorney, every time I meet with a client, I kind of learn myself what's going on. And I learn different ways to explain things, and I learn different fears that people have. And when I met with this client yesterday, and it seems so simple to me, she trusts her daughter. We talked about it. She knows her daughter is going to do her well, but she was still hesitant to do it. And it was because she thought she was going to be losing powers. And the fact is, with the power of attorney, you keep your own powers. You're giving other people the power to do things for you, as well as retaining the power to do it yourself. If you don't do that power of attorney, though, and I got to do a guardianship, the state of New York is actually going to take away all of your powers and formally give it to somebody else. So the power of attorney, even though you're, you know, actively doing something to give someone else authority, it's kind of the least restrictive way to have someone be able to act for you, because you can still do things yourself.
And you can still take them off.
Whenever you want to.
If you wanted to.
You could revoke
and name someone else. You could revoke it. Put someone else in there.
That's right. It's a just-in-case document, and it's our most important document. I always mention it's our probably least expensive document. But with a good power of attorney, not just one that allows your kids or your spouse to pay bills and sell things for you and buy things for you, but one that allows them to create Medicaid trusts and do all the things that we do, it allows you to kick the can down the road if you need to. It's a tremendous document. Where there isn't one, our hands are tied, and we end up going to court seeking the same powers that relatively simple document already had in it.
So. But it's actually worse, right?
It's worse.
If you have to get a guardianship, it's worse than having the power of attorney.
Yeah.
But it's worse than having a power of attorney because you've lost all your power.
That's right.
Correct?
That's right.
Okay.
And it's not all doom and gloom. Sometimes people think it's all in case they get incapacitated. What if you're out of town?
Yeah.
If you're out of town and you need someone to do something for
you. What if you went out of the country?
Yeah. What if you're celebrating your 60th wedding anniversary and life is good and we're nowhere near long-term care needs? Well, you might need a power of attorney. On 9/11, Ben, my folks were in England and they were supposed to fly back, I think, on the 13th. And guess who couldn't fly back on the 13th?
Your parents.
Yeah. Because the international flights, and it was all shut down.
Right.
And I remember they asked me to go to their office to check on it and do this and do that. I literally couldn't pay a bill. I was over 18. I couldn't do anything, though. I'm not going to tell you how old I was, Ben.
Okay. That's
fine. I was over 18. That's all you need to know.
Yes, that's all I need to know. You were not a lawyer at this point.
I was not.
Okay.
I was still in college.
Okay. All right.
We do have time for one quick call at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. I did mention earlier we have a seminar coming up on wills versus trust down in Kingston. I love our seminars. They're great. It's a good place to get tea and coffee and cookies and learn about some estate planning or Medicaid planning or aging in place. But it is no substitute for actually coming in and meeting with Jane Marie or Debbie, Harry, or myself. We have a whole team. We're good. And we apply all of our knowledge and our collective knowledge to your fact pattern. You know, Ben, we were meeting with a group of advisors, kind of like a networking thing, and one of our staff mentioned to them, you know, we have 40 years of experience in doing this.
Right.
And I chime in, and that's just Harry.
<Ba-dum-boom>.
Yeah, I didn't get the same response in the room, but thank
I'm sure you probably didn't know.
No.
But anybody who knows Harry would understand that. So.
Yeah. And so you got all that at your back. The thing that's better than an hour and a half seminar or an hour seminar is an hour consultation where you get at each and every one of your facts. It's like asking unlimited questions.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.